Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is the executive head of Terrain, John Newton, who joins us to discuss trade and the farm economy. But first, here's this week's headlines. New polling shows that a majority of U.S. ag producers see an economic crisis or the possibility of one on the horizon. A Farm Journal survey commissioned by the National Corn Growers Association in late August and early September showed that almost half of the 1,000 farmer respondents agreed that the U.S. is on the brink of a crisis. An additional third of respondents said the farm economy might be headed that way. The growing anxiety will also likely affect the bottom lines of farm equipment and input suppliers. Almost 60% of respondents said concerns over the farm economy would likely cause them to postpone equipment purchases in the coming year. 38% said they would scale back fertilizer application. The Environmental Protection Agency issued a long-awaited proposal exempting some small oil refiners from U.S. biofuel blending mandates. The EPA is proposing two options, either full reallocation or a 50% reallocation for small refinery exemptions that were granted in full or in part for 2023 and 2024, as well as those projected to be granted for 2025. The move follows opposition from makers of corn ethanol, renewable diesel, and other sustainable fuels to Biden-era mandates under the renewable fuel standard. The biofuel industry felt those renewable volume obligations were set far too low and hurt production and profits. EPA plans to hold a virtual public hearing on October 1st for the proposed rule. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says USDA officials are watching commodity markets as they weigh how much economic aid farmers may need this fall to keep their operations afloat. Speaking at the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture annual meeting, Rollins acknowledged the difficult position farmers are in as commodity prices remain low and trade disruptions chip away at export markets. With the ag economy in dire straits, the pressure on the Trump administration to make trade deals to open up new markets for U.S. producers continues to grow. Rollins joined President Trump and senior administration officials in the United Kingdom for trade discussions this week. She said U.S. ethanol producers would join her to meet with potential buyers. The UK trade deal framework could greatly benefit U.S. beef and ethanol exports. Harvest is beginning, and China has not yet made a purchase of U.S. soybeans from this fall's crop. We asked John Newton, the executive head at Terrain, how long this lack of purchasing could go on.
Well, I think a lot depends on when the president is able to secure a deal with the Chinese. Typically, 70% of our soybean exports to China occur between November and April. So we don't have a long runway for soybeans to ultimately move. But I do believe if we get a deal that we could see the Chinese, you know, continue to buy our soybeans for a longer period of time and forego maybe making those purchases to Brazil. So I think there's still a tremendous opportunity ahead of us to move those soybeans if we get a deal with China.
And China has pretty ample storage now, and it's interesting, Brazil's second crop will be harvested later this year in March. I mean, what threat do you see Brazil posing to the U.S. global market access, and, you know, can China avoid making commodity purchases from the U.S. altogether with their harvesting season?
Well, what we do know is that the stocks-to-use level on soybeans in China is very high, and likely in preparation for where we are now, you know, a potential new trade agreement. They needed a window of opportunity to negotiate. Could they survive without purchasing U.S. beans, potentially by drawing down their stocks and then relying on that next Brazilian harvest? But you have to rely on the weather. You have to rely on the acres. Mother Nature's a heck of a business partner. So it's a big risk for them to try to sit out of the U.S. market. And so I think ultimately we're going to get something done. But Brazil is not going away. They're a huge competitor. Whether it's in the soybean space, the cotton space, the beef space, they're a large sugar producer, they're a large ethanol producer. They're our largest competitor in the agricultural market globally, and they will continue to be that.
And obviously U.S. producers want to see some of that grain move, but in the short term, if it doesn't, I want your thoughts on what domestic grain storage capacity looks like here in the U.S. and if there's capacity to store that.
Well, one of our analysts at Terrain, Mark Rosenbaum, has looked at on-farm storage and off-farm storage. He's looked at the supplies that we believe that are out there currently, and then looked at expectations for what this harvest is going to bring, whether you look at USDA's yield estimates or the yield estimates that came off the Pro Farmer Tour a few weeks ago. And the reality is it's going to be pretty tight. In some parts of the country, especially in the upper plains, we're going to produce more than we have storage capacity. And that's a challenge. As we just mentioned, China's not buying any beans. The basis in the Red River Valley is very low, about $1.80 under the Chicago price for beans. So that's a concern. And if you're not moving them out of the Pacific Northwest, you got to store them or move them down into the Gulf. And then our friends in the Delta down in Mississippi, they don't have the storage capacity. Typically those beans, and they're harvesting now, they're harvested right into the export terminal. And if we're not selling them, where are they going to store those beans? That's the $1 million question.
So these questions about storage and then, you know, the record crop predictions, do you think that all this puts pressure on policymakers to, you know, take action on biofuel issues like year-round E15, sustainable aviation fuel, renewable diesel, you know, to expand domestic market access?
I mean, it's all of the above approach. I mean, the secretary's in the United Kingdom now talking about, with Undersecretary Luke Lindbergh, I believe, talking about potential market access. They reported record exports of wheat recently. So export markets, domestic markets through renewable fuels. E15 is certainly to have clarity on E15 from a federal level nationally will help send the signal that, you know, and it won't be immediate, you know, maybe it's several years down the road that we have that fully, that full infrastructure set up to deliver it, but that's a demand boost. Reduced regulatory burdens help. A phase two agreement with China helps. So again, it's an all of the above approach to really help us boost the farm economy and get out of this really 3-year tight margin environment that we've experienced for crops.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers right after this.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Ag committee leaders have been in support of Farm Aid this fall, and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins said she'll be watching commodity markets to weigh how much assistance farmers will need. We asked John Newton, the executive head at Terrain, how much emergency financial assistance farmers could need.
That one's probably a little bit above my pay grade, but you look at what's been done so far through the American Relief Act, $31 billion in economic support and support for catastrophic natural disasters. Last I looked, about $13 or $14 billion had gone out the door. $66 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Importantly, a lot of that, for the crop that's in the ground and getting ready to be harvested, that support won't come until October of 2026. So there is a window there where the support that's been authorized by Congress is not going to hit the farm, and farmers are going to go out and plant a new crop before that support ultimately arrives, and crop insurance is enhanced, but I'll leave it to congressional leaders, the secretary, and the White House to determine how much and what type of support may be needed.
And I want to get your thoughts on, well, how that aid package could potentially be funded. I mean, the chairman of the House Ag Committee says tariff revenue can't be used, but USDA's Commodity Credit Corporation is, the funding in that is running pretty low as well.
Well, I think, spending years on Capitol Hill working for Senator Bozeman and knowing that if there's a will, there's a way, right? Working with leadership, working with the appropriators, working with Senator Hoeven, if Congress wants to do something, if the White House wants to do something, they'll look and see what tools they have in the toolbox and ultimately deliver for agriculture.
I want to get your thoughts as well. The Fed this week cut interest rates a little bit. You know, I'm curious, how will that affect,
finally,
how will that affect farmers and ranchers as we look ahead? Because that provides some relief for them.
Well, so I think it's twofold, really. And I think you saw a 25 basis point cut this week. Expectations are we could see two more of those. And that should provide, you know, some lower interest rates, certainly. The challenge is if you're trying to restructure debt and where the treasuries are today, the 10-year treasury, the two-year treasury, the three-month treasury, right now they're all huddled together really tightly, as if you're in a football huddle. They're all very close together. There's not much room if you're restructuring debt to find any relief on payments for a farmer. And last time we were in a downturn like this in the crop farm economy, the interest rate environment was significantly different. You could restructure debt and actually save money for a producer. And the other factor that's different right now is the losses are much deeper. I think according to USDA data, the average corn farmer is losing $161 per acre on this crop. That's a lot larger than what we saw during the last downturn in the farm economy. So to restructure that debt is much more difficult today because of where the 10-year Treasury note is and where nearby Treasury notes are.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on the concern in farm country over exports to China in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA is projecting less than $10 billion worth of U.S. agricultural exports to China during the next fiscal year. If that number holds, it would be the lowest ag export value to China in nearly two decades. This chart shows American agricultural exports to China from fiscal year 2006 all the way to the projected total for fiscal year 2026. As you can see, exports have been above $10 billion since fiscal year 2008. Numbers were low in FY2019, but they still did not fall below $10 billion. Chinese buyers are still avoiding American commodities. At the end of last month, China had booked no future sales for American corn, soybeans, wheat, and sorghum, according to analysis from North Dakota State University. China's current retaliatory tariff on American soybeans is making them less competitive than other suppliers like Brazil. It remains to be seen how and when Chinese buyers will return to working with American exporters, but for now, anxiety remains high across farm country. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. New polling shows that the majority of U.S. ag producers see an economic crisis or the possibility of one on the horizon. We're joined by Krista Swanson with the National Corn Growers Association and Brandon Lips with CapRock Strategies on our panel today. To begin, we asked Krista about that report and the state of the farm economy.
Yeah, so we surveyed over 1,000 corn farmers from across the U.S. And like you mentioned, the results reveal some serious concerns about the state of the ag economy and farmers' financial situations. You know, one of those questions that we asked was, how concerned are you about your farm's financials compared to a year ago? And two-thirds said that they were more concerned. Another question that we asked was, you know, do you think that the U.S. ag economy is on the brink of a farm crisis? And nearly 80% said that they believe the U.S. Farm economy is on the brink of crisis or maybe on the brink of crisis. And so, yeah, I think those results are really telling and really important to have out there right now, you know, especially when we think about earlier this month, USDA coming out with some farm income numbers that, you know, would show or indicate that the farm economy is doing okay. But that includes a lot more than just the crop sector or what some of our farmers are actually feeling.
Krista, there's a lot of pressure on the nation's producers, including input costs right now. So I'm curious, are you seeing producer sentiment ripple through, you know, the broader farm economy, like equipment and input sales as well?
Yeah, there's definitely that ripple effect throughout the economy. And you know, yeah, farm input costs at really high levels, record high levels, really since 2022. There was the big jump from 21 to 22. And then, you know, specifically looking at the cost to produce corn, it's stayed about the same since 2022, but prices have changed a lot since then. And yeah, that ripple effect, you know, one of the other results of our survey, we asked what changes might you be considering for 2026? And 58% of farmers said, you know, cutting back on equipment purchases. When we see farmers making those types of changes, the number two was cutting back on fertilizer applications. So collectively, you know, if farmers are cutting back on purchases of some of those types of products, that impacts retailers and the people who work at those retail locations and the manufacturers. And really, it just has this ripple effect throughout the supply chain, which impacts you know, the whole economy and households throughout the economy.
And Brandon, bringing into the conversation, the Make America Healthy Again Commission released their final report last week. Reviewing that, what differences do you see from the first edition? And, you know, how did you see ag groups respond to the release of that report?
Sure. I think the response of agriculture overall to the report was generally positive. We are excited to see that the administration has listened to the ag groups. You've all heard Secretary Kennedy talk about how many meetings they've had with ag groups between HHS, the White House, and certainly USDA since their initial assessment report came out. The thing is, I think all Americans agree that we have a health problem in this country. We have a health problem with our children, with our adults, and it needs to be solved. And we certainly congratulate the administration for making sure that they're focused on that, but extremely encouraged that they have taken the opportunity to hear from constituencies. Secretary Rollins, I believe, has done a great job advocating for agriculture and ensuring that those across the spectrum who haven't been involved in agriculture understand that ag inputs go through a strict regulatory process and scientific review before they're approved for use in our food supply. I think the administration across the board under the leadership of President Trump heard that, and they're going to look at the science and make sure that they're not making emotional decisions on the front with regard to agricultural inputs.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
Yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. The Make America Healthy Again Commission report could have a large influence on the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, which provides a framework for nutrition suggestions. Brandon Lipps helped lead that process in 2020 while working at USDA. We asked him what differences there could be in the new edition of the Dietary Guidelines expected to be released this fall.
If you listen to the Secretary Kennedy and certainly Secretary Rollins talk about the forthcoming Dietary Guidelines, they're going to change that document really from something that used to be intended for nutrition professionals and guidance for the USDA programs that was then turned into a consumer-facing education campaign. They're going to go straight and make the Dietary Guidelines itself a consumer education campaign. I'm excited to see what the result of that is. Americans are confused about nutrition. Government and researchers have been all over the board for decades. We've had focus on single nutrients like fat, sodium, sugar in the past, and that hasn't resulted in positive change in America's nutrition outcome. They're going to focus on broader things to help Americans understand that we need to focus on whole foods, on healthy foods, but not only that, but that we need to be working on our sedentary lifestyles to move that forward. So we've heard we're going to see a shorter document. They're going to focus on whole foods. We don't know exactly what that means. Obviously, our food supply is built on some processing of food, and not all processing is bad. There is currently a request for information out between USDA and HHS that's asking folks to provide input on how we would define ultra-processed foods. That's a critically important definition as we look at nutrition in this country. So excited to see what comes in the dietary guidelines, but very encouraged that the administration is taking a science focus, that they're slowing down a bit and making sure that they get this right.
And Krista, I want to get your thoughts on the Maha Commission's report as well. I mean, we talk about the state of the farm economy, but President Trump has made statements that he'd like to see Coca-Cola transition from using corn syrup in their products to sugar. First, your thoughts on the Maha Commission's report, and then, you know, do you have concerns about corn syrup demand as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think we were very concerned with the initial Maha Commission report out in May. Really from the perspective, you know, like also we care about the science and we wanted to see a science-based approach. And some of what was in that first report was not science-based, especially when it came to pesticides, which are really important to corn growers and used across, you know, nearly all corn acres in the United States. So that was, you know, something that we worked really hard to communicate with the administration and some of the agencies engaged in this. And so we were pleased with the latest report that, you know, didn't, you know, took a more science-based approach and didn't address some of the, you know, unfounded pesticide attacks that were in the first one. So pleased to see that. As far as the high fructose corn syrup goes, you know, right now in the situation we're in, where we're looking at a 16.8 billion bushel corn crop, we certainly don't want to see any threats to any demand segments out there. And so, you know, that is, you know, uses about 400 million bushels of corn a year. So it's a relatively small piece of our demand picture. But again, you know, all pieces of demand are important to us.
And Brandon, as we wrap up here, analyzing the findings from the Maha report and looking ahead to the DJAs, you know, what changes do you anticipate to crop demand and participation in assistance programs like SNAP and WIC, you know, that these reports could change demand in the future?
In the past, certainly the dietary guidelines are used to set purchasing restrictions for government feeding programs from school lunch to SNAP, which, you know, spends $150 billion a year. There's a big focus on that. They're now talking about how that might affect the VA and certainly purchasing food purchasing for our military programs. So just from the government perspective, it can cause a huge impact on purchasing across crops. But also, as they're looking to make the dietary guidelines more consumer focused, if consumers actually listen to the government for the first time, certainly with the platform that this administration has, we could see huge shift in purchasing with regard to what agricultural products are turned into nutritious food.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Honecke looks at the improving state of global food security in this week's Map It Out.
USDA's most recent global food assessment report shows food security is improving and could improve significantly by 2035. This map shows the percentage change in global food security in countries that participated in the department's global food assessment from last year to this year. Food security is expected to improve this year in all countries marked in blue. The countries marked in green are expected to have a lower food security this year. Every country involved in this assessment is classified as either a lower or middle-income country. ERS estimates 13.5% of the population in these countries will be food insecure, which is more than 26% less than last year. Looking ahead, ERS predicts food insecurity to keep decreasing over the next decade. They believe that by 2035, nearly 45% fewer people globally will be food insecure compared to today. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, both the House and Senate are out of session. We'll bring you a special edition of the show from the Women in Agribusiness Summit in Orlando. And there's still time to register for the Kansas City Ag Outlook Forum. You won't want to miss conversations with Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins, USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, and other ag leaders on September 25th. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.